Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Teich. Last month, researchers, including some in the Milwaukee area, reported success in testing a new device used to treat sleep apnea. Patients have a pacemaker-like device implanted to stimulate their upper airway, which closes off during episodes of obstructive apnea. Knowledge of the disorder has come a long way in the last quarter century, thanks in large measure to a group of more than 1,000 Wisconsin volunteers known as the Wisconsin Sleep Cohort. Science writer Eric Ness looked into the work done with those research subjects in the February issue of Milwaukee Magazine, and he joins us on the line from Madison to share more. Welcome to the show.
Great to be here, Mitch.
What was it that first brought this sleep cohort together at the University of Wisconsin?
Well, it's kind of a funny story. Back in, it actually happened in a parking lot outside the hospital. Terry Young, who was an epidemiologist, kind of getting frustrated into her career. She was looking at cancer clusters and the science was coming to a dead end. And all of a sudden she gets hailed in the parking lot by a cardiac specialist who's managed to pull together a grant to look at sleep apnea.
And at the time this was beginning, I gather sleep apnea itself was pretty mysterious.
I mean, it has been around for a long time. We've principally known to be a disease thought to afflict older men who snored. And the fact was there was just simply no way to treat it up until the mid-80s when we developed the CPAP machines, the continuous positive airway pressure machine, which is a mask that you wear that keeps pumping air into your system so that your trachea doesn't shut down.
Well, and so let's go back to this fateful meeting in the parking lot. What ostensibly was the reason that someone interested in cancer clusters and someone interested in cardiovascular issues got together over the idea of studying sleep apnea?
Well, now that we actually had a way to treat this, and a previous treatment was a tracheotomy, so a really radical kind of treatment. So basically, we didn't treat sleep apnea. But it had always been of interest to cardiologists, wondering what happens to the heart when you stop breathing at night. And so now that they had a way to treat it, they decided they needed to dig a little deeper into this mysterious disease. And the cardiologist, he's gonna follow the body side of things. But Terry Young was the medical detective, the epidemiologist. And her job was really to help design the study so that over the course of what is now almost 25 years, you could actually begin to draw some real conclusions. And what they did was they recruited 1,500 people, mostly employees in the state government system, the theory being that they're going to stick around and be reliable subjects. And every night, they'd bring a couple more people into the sleep lab. They would wire them up. And it took them 4 years, but eventually they got this baseline measurement on whether or not these people had sleep apnea, what their breathing and sleeping patterns were. And from that foundation, every 4 years, they bring these people back in, take a look again. Do they have sleep apnea? And maybe we should take a moment here to talk about what sleep apnea is.
I was going to go there. What do we know now? I mean, if it was known about, it's certainly understood a lot better today, I would imagine.
Yeah, well, a typically healthy adult will enter a light sleep, and then you'll fall deeper and deeper through slow-wave sleep for about 90 to 120 minutes. Then you'll start your first REM cycle, that rapid eye movement. This will last about 10 minutes, and then finally you'll pop back out of that REM cycle and start over again. So this is what happens if you have a healthy sleep cycle, and you'll just go through these stages of sleep throughout the night. Now, while you are in REM sleep, you become partially paralyzed, and this happens because if you didn't, you'd act out your dreams. This paralysis can extend to the upper airway, which is what collapses during a sleep apnea event. The body tries to breathe harder and harder, but against that closed airway, it's kind of like sucking on a thick malt through a straw. So you're actually sucking the upper airway more and more closed. You know, the body gets alarmed and has to awaken you to get more air in there, but you never actually achieve full consciousness. So what happens is again and again and again and again, this cycle of sleep, suffocate, awake happens through the night, and you wake up in the morning and maybe you feel like you didn't have a great night's sleep, but you have no recollection of these events. So you could sleep, strangle, wake 500 times in the course of a night and never know that this is happening to you.
Well, and aside from the fact that it turns out that you didn't get a particularly good night's sleep, what are the ramifications for this? What's happening to your body by suffocating itself multiple times and sometimes many, many times over the course of a typical night?
We are still untangling all of that. But, you know, it's really clear now that all kinds of different things happen. It can affect your rates of obesity. It can affect your development of heart disease. There's this new phenomenon, not a new phenomenon, but we have a new name for it. It's called the metabolic syndrome. And it's this unholy alliance of obesity, diabetes, heart disease, high blood pressure. The problem, you know, you've been told all of your life that these diseases are caused by how you eat and whether or not you get exercise. And that's true. But what we're beginning to realize is sleep actually plays a role in all of this as well. And that's really what the Wisconsin Sleep Cohort has accomplished in the last 20 years, was to begin to inject into the debate about public health what are these things. Because you don't, you know, you've been told all of your lives through school and health classes, oh, you need to eat right, you need to get exercise. But sleep matters too. And that's the real accomplishment of the Sleep Cohort. And it's part of sleep science has been absolutely exploding in the last 10 years, and I'm sure you've all seen the popular headlines about a wide variety of impacts and studies. But really, at the baseline, there's almost nothing in the sleep science world like this sleep cohort. You know, the fact that we've been studying 1,500 people over the course of a quarter of a century is really extraordinary.
Well, and interesting, you talked about metabolic syndrome. One of the points you write about is the chicken and the egg question, the conditions that often coexist mm-hmm. with sleep apnea, like hypertension and diabetes
and
other conditions. It's sometimes difficult to know which came first, but the sleep study has attempted to address that.
Right. For example, some of the risk factors for sleep apnea are smoking, drinking, being overweight. Well, these are also risk factors for high blood pressure. So how do you tease them out? You know, I don't understand all of the mathematical judo that these epidemiologists use to figure it out. But the bottom line, you know, they discovered, and this is one of the really important findings from the sleep cohort, is that if you had sleep apnea worth treating, and, you know, the threshold for treatment is 15 events per hour, 15 of these stoppages where you go through the sleep, suffocate, wake. So if you have sleep apnea worth treating, you were three times more likely to develop high blood pressure in the 4 to 8 year period that part of the study was conducted.
You also write that there's an economic impact to all of this, that this is not just necessarily, and that's obviously wrapped up in public health, this is not just about whether someone will develop hypertension or diabetes. There is definitely an economic issue to nipping this in the bud, if you will.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you look at the annual estimated cost of diabetes in this country, you know, $245 billion. Hypertension, $93 billion. Cancer, $124.6 billion. Now, we can't lay all of those costs on sleep apnea. Again, it's the chicken egg. It's all of these multifactorial things. But a reputable estimate from the Harvard Medical School puts the cost of sleep apnea between $65 and $165 billion. And it's the kind of thing that can really affect the bottom line. A recent study of 22,000 Union Pacific employees found that simply by increasing awareness and treatment of sleep apnea decreased the health care costs of that company by nearly $5 million in just over 3 years. So that's a big change when we're as concerned as we are about health care costs.
And so quite sensibly, this study has been playing out in Wisconsin, but the implications for the work and for researchers extend around the world.
Exactly. And there are some cool things that have happened. For example, Paul Pappard, who runs the study now, took over from Terry Young a few years ago. He traveled with his department head, Javier Nieto, for a scientific meeting in Barcelona a couple of years ago. While they were there, they met a Spanish colleague who was inducing sleep apnea in rats with melanoma and studying the tumor growth, and he was seeing these tumors grow faster when the rats had sleep apnea. Interesting, something that's probably not going to be in the literature for a few more years, chance meeting, but on the plane back home, Pappard and Nieto realized that they could really easily look for corroborating evidence in this cohort data that they'd been building for two decades. And so in just a short time, they found a very strong link between sleep apnea 10 to 20 years ago and cancer mortality at a later date. It's not the proverbial smoking gun. We need more data. We need more study. But the fact that this treasure trove of data was there meant that scientists could kind of dip back into it and confirm, or, you know, in some cases deny that wow, there's something interesting going on. We need to look closer.
This cohort came together almost 25 years ago. Is it likely to continue into the indefinite future?
Well, that's always the question these days. Unfortunately, the whole sequester issue is putting a real hit on federal research dollars. Right now, the sleep cohort did not get its funding in its first attempt, but that doesn't mean they're out of the picture at all. They're hopeful, and there's some really cool stuff that they're trying to look for right now. And this, again, gets back to having such an incredible trove of data. So what they're trying to look at now, or what they want to do, they've teased out all of these cardiovascular impacts, and what they'd like to do now is look at, most people are going to die of cardiovascular disease or cancer, but on your way, you're going to start dropping names. Scientists are wondering, could sleep apnea and sleep deficiency generally have a role in age-related decline of brain function? And so what the sleep cohort wants to do is to begin scanning the brains of the cohort. And that's an expensive proposition and one of these curious things where all of a sudden they've been funded by the heart and lung side of the federal research grant, and now they want to move over to the brain. And it's a different arm that does the funding. They have to do a little politicking to see if they can get past that. But it's a great question. As you age, you're more likely to be diagnosed with borderline sleep apnea, that's 15 events per hour. And what the doctors wonder is, how aggressive should you be in treating it? How hard do you push someone who comes in with borderline symptoms? Doctors don't know what to tell those people.
And so obviously this is certainly a big question to be going after at a time when the general population of the country is getting older.
Exactly. And here's the thing. It could be a billion-dollar question. You know, with a burgeoning population in this age range, treatment for sleep apnea is annoying and costly. It might cost about $2,000 a year per patient. But if your brain manages to stay healthy longer, it could mean avoiding institutionalization later in life. The cost of caring for patients with advanced Alzheimer's disease and advanced dementia is enormous. That's on the cost side. But on the personal side, you know, what would you personally do to eke out an extra 5 years of a healthy brain?
It's a pretty compelling question and one we might just have to sleep on.
Yeah, and it's not important just for Wisconsin or North America. It's important for the whole world. There is no other set of data like this. We have no other aging group of people who've been followed for such a long period of time for this disease. So it is an extraordinary scientific opportunity, and I really hope they get the money.
Well, Eric Ness, thank you so much for helping explain it for us.
All right, great.
Writer Eric Ness's article on the Wisconsin Sleep Cohort is in the February issue of Milwaukee Magazine. There's a link to it from WUWM.com/lakeeffect. Auto contributor Mark Savage touches on some recent highlights for the car industry when Lake Effect returns on Milwaukee Public Radio.